Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really, really glad you tuned in. We are having a fantastic conversation. This is actually hour two of Live the Promise for those of you who hop in the car right now to listen. And if you listen often enough, you know we have our good friend Dr. Troy on the show once a month to talk health and healing questions. And so the phone lines are open. It's a toll-free call, 877-933-2484. Before we get our call, Peggy, who's been holding for a little bit here, I have to give an announcement that next month, Thursday, November 9th, we've got Dr. Troy coming in for another live studio audience event. Our last one was such a hit that a number of you said, hey, I missed that one. I want to come in. So what we've been pitching is having you sign up online on the Live the Promise show page, but just a special gift to you, our listeners, for today, for this 2 hours. We're inviting you, if you want to be in on the studio audience and you don't want to mess with the website today, you can email me directly, okay? Just want to know that you can come because we don't want to save a spot for you if you end up not being able to show. So if you think you can come 3 to 5, Thursday, November 9th, email me, put in studio, something like that in the subject line. All we need is your email and your phone number. Susie@myfaithradio.com. Susie@myfaithradio.com. And Doc, we're going to talk about, I'm excited about this because we love to have an opening kind of dialogue with every show. So next month, though, because it's going to be the beginning of November, heading into the holidays, we're going to talk about how to pace ourselves in the holidays, how to detox before we get all toxic. Add to that just what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we're going to talk about just some of the things that we see that happens this time of the year. The majority of dysfunction that starts to occur in our bodies starts at this time of the year. So we're going to go through setting ourselves up for success. We're surrounded by sugar. We're surrounded by different types of stressors. And also there's many things physiologically that start to occur in our body because of the change of the seasons. So we're going to be discussing all of those so that it'll help bring awareness to what's happening maybe in your body or in your family's bodies and explain some of the reasons why certain things are happening. But more importantly, step into it so that you have a little bit of awareness and be a little bit of preventative or proactive about what's going on.
And you'll go through the holidays not feeling toxic. You won't wake up on January 1st going, what have I done?
Yes.
You know, we want you to pace yourself and be fully present. And do you have a verse you wanted to share around that? And Peggy, we're coming to you just right next. Hang with
me. Yes, this is the verse I'll be sharing next month, but it's very, very telling, and there's so much here. So just bear with me. It comes from Hebrews 12:1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And we're going to be talking about how shame plays a role into the choices we make. And
Wow. This
verse is all about the discipline that is required during times of being tested. And this season is a season of being tested.
Wow. And so if your physiology is already weakening because of the season that we're in, and then you dump all kinds of stuff in your body, it's no wonder that you lose so much ground. We're not talking about legalism here. We want you to be free. We want you to be healthy. I'm so excited. So if you want to sit in on our live studio show, we would love to have you. We're going to have refreshments. We're going to mingle. It's going to be great fun. Email me. Just put in studio, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Okay. Peggy from Madison deserves some kind of award for holding as long as she has. Peggy, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I have a gallbladder issue. I've been told I have a half-inch mass on my gallbladder. Mm. And I got an opinion also from an ultrasound. A naturopath said he thought probably instead of having it out right away, do the elimination diet, you know, wheat, dairy, that type of thing. And so I'm doing that. And then I was just wondering if he thinks I should have it removed or wait back to the ultrasound, maybe like in about 6 months again. Or I've also been told that a lot of times the gallbladder issues are benign. Just wanted to know what you thought on that.
Definitely it's something that should not be ignored. But I'll tell you this. If the mass is inside the gallbladder, you said on, so that when it's on, that tells me that's something different. So if it's in, then dietary change and eating foods that thin the bile do have a potential for any type of stone to start to dissolve, especially if it's early on. And so the gallbladder is a storage unit or storage sac for your bile. So if you start thinning the bile, a lot of times you can actually start to break down the stones or pass it. Now, half inch is pretty big. And so if you start passing it and it gets stuck, that's going to be instant gallbladder removal because you'll be in urgent care and they'll take it out right then and there. However, it is completely possible to start to change the function of the bile system. And so if you can do that with diet elimination and working with your naturopath, then that's great. However, you want to make sure that you follow up in 6 months, like you said, get the ultrasound. If you've made any gains in the size, then you can stay the course. If you've not, then you've got to look at the alternative, your options there as far as removal. I will tell you this, that the number one surgery in Minnesota, I'm not sure about Wisconsin, but Minnesota is gallbladder removal, and there's reasons why that's happening. And so there are many, many gallbladders that are removed, and it doesn't correct the original problem. But if you have a stone or a mass that is disrupting function, that's a different story. So take a look at your symptoms, why you're getting it done in the first place. If changing the diet and doing some cleansing, they'll probably do an estrogen cleanse at some point because that's needed for gallbladder dysfunction as well. If your symptoms improve, then you've just bought yourself time. If the symptoms are not improved and the stone or the mass is unchanged or worse, growing, then you've got to follow through.
Thank you so much for that. 877-933-2484. Margaret's checking in from Richfield with a question. Hey, Margaret, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm I'm over 80, and I have my osteoporosis. Recently, it went from osteopenia to osteoporosis. The doctor put me back on a Fosamax derivative called alendronate, once a week, 70 milligrams, to stop bone loss. Are there any negative effects of this Fosamax? Does it cause hair loss? Or any, and are there any? Are there dietary alternatives that actually stop bone loss? That's one.
Yes, there are things you can do to slow down the rate of bone loss. I'm going to say this with a loving, loving heart. At 80 years of age, it's a lot harder than at 20 years of age. Mm-hmm. And so Fosamax is something that I would probably stay on so that you can reduce bone loss and then start working on some of the other factors to see if they help at all as far as keeping the bone there. So getting weight-bearing exercise and having your muscles pull on the bone is something that's very beneficial. So it has to be age-appropriate for osteopenia, so meaning that we need physical exercise. Sometimes that starts with pool therapy and doing what your bones and muscles and joints can work with. Keeping your body as alkaline as possible is very important. As we age, our cells actually start to break down faster. And when they spill their contents, it's actually quite acidic, can be acidic to the body. So it becomes harder and harder to become alkaline with each decade as we get older. So a lot of foods that are green and the veggies, these are the high alkaline foods. If you want to get a list of high alkaline foods, those are the ones that are really good for us. Things like sugar and coffee, unfortunately, are very acidic, and so they're bad for the scenario. So when you look at the big picture, the grand scheme of things, if you can follow a low alkaline or high alkaline diet, low acid diet, and it's not stressful for you, then go ahead and do that with the weight-bearing exercise. Vitamin D with K2 is very important for the laying down of bone. Laying down of calcium in the bones. So you have to make sure your vitamin D levels are at a significant level. The blood should read somewhere between 50 and 80, preferably closer to 80, so that as you're actually working the muscles and the bones, you can actually have that calcium be put down into bone instead of being pulled to help neutralize the acid that's in the body.
Thank you so much, Margaret. And you're amazing at 80-something. Wow. I love that. So this listener writes and says, can you ask Dr. Troy what he'd recommend, if anything, as a good replacement supplement for estrogen in treating menopause symptoms, in particular with estrogen patch being advised or taken off market by doctors, anything he'd recommend to help with replacing loss of estrogen?
Yeah, so there are other factors that you can do, other things that you can use. to help naturally. Unfortunately, the number one food that that mimics estrogen is soy. But a lot of the soy has been genetically altered, and so that we're seeing a lot of people develop soy reactions. So what used to be work the best, the isoflavonoids from soy aren't working as efficiently or effectively because of the different reactions to soy. So they do have different forms of estrogen. There are a lot of doctors around now that will look at the specific type of estrogen and give you specific recommendations, not generic estrogen. So you can still get estrogen. If you're concerned about some of the studies and research as far as breast cancer, they can actually test for that to see if you're even a candidate for that. And so you can still get the prescription estrogens that are more specific to your body type, number one. You can also start to look at different foods that that help with that. Now, you'll find foods like if you can tolerate soy that's non-GMO, that can be very helpful if you don't have a soy reaction. Fish oils actually help with an inflammatory reaction to make the estrogen that you do have a little bit better. Supporting your adrenal glands is one of the best things you can do, because once you go through menopause, your ovaries stop producing the estrogen, and there's a very particular type of estrogen that the adrenal glands, the stress gland, starts to produce. Now, the adrenal glands require less sugar, more protein. And so the challenge is, as we age, we lose the ability to digest the protein. So if you work on your stomach and your ability to actively digest the protein, that can help. So strangely enough, one of the things that we find has the most effect to help the adrenal glands is giving hydrochloric acid supplements when someone has a meat meal, a protein meal, because that breaks down the protein, allows the amino acids to be used more so in the body. The adrenal glands get supported by that, and in doing so can be more effective at releasing natural estrogen through the adrenal glands.
So would the hydrochloric acid be an enzyme?
It's like an enzyme, but it's not. It'll be a standalone. So a lot of the digestive enzyme supplements that are out there, they'll have enzymes to break down the carbohydrates, the fats, and protease, a little bit of a protein enzyme. Hydrochloric acid usually has betaine-HCl in it, and that's it, with maybe one or two other things. So it's almost always a standalone because because they're two different things. The enzymes are released by the pancreas. The stomach releases the hydrochloric acid.
Interesting.
And those levels decrease as we age. So it becomes very, very important to be able to release the hydrochloric acid. And most people, as they age, are put on acid blockers, which then decreases their ability to break down the protein effectively, and then the adrenal glands start to get overtaxed again.
Well, that reminds me, on the other side, I want to talk about antacids, because those are overused, and that's not without cost, right?
Correct.
But to this friend who wrote in about estrogen and the adrenal support, one thing that you recommend sometimes is cortisol. That's a product, right?
Yes.
And
yep.
And it supports the adrenals. It helps balance things. It kind of gives you the help you need, right?
Yes. Yep. So, it gives you the help you need, and actually helps with the brain's management of the adrenal hormones as well.
So good. So interesting. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. So when we come back, I want to talk more about if you can't lose weight, you're struggling with that, and antacids, maybe the overuse, and maybe there's another option, right? We'll be back in a minute. There's some good music out there today. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Of The Promise. It is another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We get him on every month to answer your questions. And why? Because we both believe with all of our hearts that God wants you to flourish, and that there's something, changes maybe, that you can make, and a belief and trust that God will do something in you, that you don't have to stay stuck here. And we're talking about diet. We're talking about your sleep patterns. All these things matter. And we tend to kind of lower the standard, and we live with a low level of misery, and we put up with it, but we don't need to. But we've got to be willing to get up and get going, right? 877-933-2484. We've got Blaine checking in from Princeton. Bless his heart. I think his phone dropped twice, so glad to have him here. Blaine, you're on the air.
I have a problem sleeping through the night. Wondering if you have some advice for me on that.
Sorry about that. What do you say, Doc?
There are a couple most commons when it comes to trouble staying asleep. And so the most common one is the sleep disorder. It's a cousin to sleep apnea. So especially if you have a parent or a grandparent that's been diagnosed with sleep apnea and you're younger, you could be up against what's called upper airway resistance syndrome. So UARS. And it's a scenario where the airway actually collapses and you don't get enough oxygen. And so in sleep apnea, the oxygen levels just kind of drop down and then people stop breathing and then it kicks back up. In upper airway resistance syndrome, we see an actual response where the brain will send a signal down to the adrenal glands, the stress glands, and release a stress reaction, if you will, and it'll pull us out of that deep sleep and even start to pull people into a conscious state. They'll wake up and sometimes the heart's racing, sometimes they're breathing heavy, or sometimes they just wake up and they're wide awake and they don't know why they're wide awake. And so that's the most common scenario. The second common scenario is a reactive hypoglycemia. That means the blood sugar is dropping too far down in the middle of the night and you're having a low blood sugar response and that wakes you up. And so for that, you can actually get a blood sugar pinprick test that you can do at home and take your blood sugar before you go to bed. When you wake up, if you get woken up in the middle of the night, take your blood sugar. If it's below 65, then it's definitively hypoglycemia. If it's between 65 and 80, then it's a moderate reaction, if you will. And so that tells us that there is a program of blood sugar balancing that has to occur. It means that you're eating too high a sugar during the day and you're having a reactive response at nighttime. So changing the diet, it'll take about 4 weeks, but changing the diet to eating low glycemic foods will help with that. If you do eat well and you're still having a low blood sugar response, then there's a problem with stress or with thyroid reactions there. Or some level of autoimmunity. And then the third one is sometimes we just, with stress, have bad dreams, and the bad dreams can trigger an adrenal reaction themselves. So if you're being chased in your dreams or you're having some challenges with stressful dreams, look at the food you're eating and or unresolved issues in your life and start working on those two areas. And those are the most common reasons for sleep deprivation. Now, occasionally you can have other intestinal inflammation disorders that decrease your serotonin. So if there's any level of anxiety or depression during the day, then you might be deficient in melatonin at nighttime, the deep sleep hormone. You can do a saliva test to measure your levels of melatonin to see if your sleep cycle is good, your wake cycle, and then also check your adrenal glands at the same time to see what level of adrenal stress you might be in. And those scenarios will help quite a bit with the sleep. If it's upper airway resistance syndrome, then we generally, if you see a chiropractor, they can do seated occiput adjustments and retrain or work with the muscles of the airway. And sometimes dentists will build splints that actually push the jaw forward to keep the airway open as well. And those tend to be the best fixes for the sleep disorder.
Boy, that's so good. Thank you, Blaine, for that. All right, we're going to try to get Marielle here from Robbinsdale. We've got about 3.5 minutes to our hard break at the bottom. But Marielle, you're on the air. Hi.
I wanted to know about my daughter, autoimmune disease that she has. She can't sleep at night. She'll go to sleep, but she'll wake up. And she can't take melatonin because it says right on the bottle, do you have any autoimmune diseases? And she has MS. Can't take it.
Okay, so almost the exact same conversation. So with autoimmune, there at some point, we had someone else earlier in the show had MS as well, and it's the same type of thing. We usually see a sleep disorder develops, and so there's an area of the brain that regulates our fight or flight response with our rest and digest response. So you focus on the digestive system. There's probably some physical work that's needed for the head and airway to help with the sleep disorder. And blood sugar regulation has to be addressed, making sure there's not a low blood sugar response. Now, as long as the MS has not affected the area of the brain, the cerebellum itself, you should be able to get to sleep. And it's very, very important to keep working on the sleep part of this to help decrease the likelihood of any flares with the MS. Also, avoiding the food reactants is going to be very, very crucial with this, especially if eggs is a part of that conversation, and then potentially supplementing the liver system with choline. A lot of the melatonin is made from serotonin, which can be depleted with intestinal inflammation. So the first place I'd start is to work on the intestinal dysfunction, identify it. There will be something there. If you've worked on that for years, then go to the physical part with the sleep. Again, when we bring in our MS patients at Synapse, we actually identify pretty much across the board intestinal inflammatory food reactants with a sleep disorder. It's very rare. That and fibromyalgia are the two most common areas where we see a sleep disorder pretty much across the board.
Mm, wow. Okay, we've got 1.5 minutes left to our hard break. So let's just see if we can get Jill's question in. And if we talk fast, we'll start the answer and pick it up on the other side. Hey, Jill, you're on the air.
Hi, Susan, Dr. Troy. Quick question for you. So it might not be quick, but my father is 83 years old. He was in perfect health, except for some osteoarthritis up until May. In May, they started him on 50 milligrams prednisone for possible temporal arteritis. They don't really think he had it, but they've been weaning him off slowly all summer. There's been a dramatic decline in him as he's weaned. When he was on 20 milligrams in July and 30 milligrams right before that, he saw, he told me he's met everybody before. It's been like a deja vu with every experience he had. And then now his affect is completely flat. It's like he's severely depressed. Mm. His appetite is poor. He's got some pseudo gout in his knees. We've got him currently hospitalized down in Rochester, but we are not finding any answers. One of my big questions is, even on prednisone, right now he's currently on 9 milligrams. Could he have secondary adrenal insufficiency that could be causing some of this? Or do you have any other suggestions of where should we look? Because he's been, we've been doctoring, and it's just been steady decline.
I'm so sorry. Okay, Jill, we got a hard break here, so we got to go out. When we come back, you got it, right, Doc?
Yep.
So Doc will reset your question, Jill, on the other side of the break, and then he'll answer it. He's going to do all of it, right? Email if you've got a question to Susie@myfaithradio.com or call 877-93-FAITH. Back in a minute. For tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is The Promise. It is another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We get him in studio every month to take your calls and your questions because we want to see you well. We believe Jesus wants you well. And it's just amazing when you start to dig into it how fearfully and wonderfully we're made. And that sometimes it's a few tweaks that can make all the difference in the world. Phone lines are open. And I'm going to have Dr. Troy set up Jill's question in just a moment. But just want to give you another heads up because it's coming up so close for us. We have a live studio audience opportunity for you where Dr. Troy is coming in with a live studio audience and we've got space for you. I've been pitching it but asking you to go to our website to sign up, but for these couple hours, just to make it easier for you, you can email me directly. If you know that you can make it, it's Thursday, November 9th, 3 to 5. It's free and we'll have some refreshments and all of that, but just email me Susie@myfaithradio.com. All we need is your email and your phone number and you'll get receive a verification that you indeed have a ticket to get in. And we would love to see you. Okay, so if you wouldn't mind, Dr. Troy, resetting Jill's question around her dad and then give your answer.
Well, the question really was being treated for temporal arteritis with the steroids. And so when it comes to prednisone, 9 milligrams is not a lot. And so our other question at the end of it was whether or not that would be depleting the adrenal glands, and we know that can happen in the long term, but in the short term, it actually, especially with hydrocortisone, helps a depleted adrenal system. Mm. And so with temporal arteritis, it's one of those things where the steroids just work. They just help. It's anti-inflammatory. Not much else can help that. And so it usually is a depleted adrenal system that caused that. So if there's no impact there, then my thought goes to if his affect changed afterwards, then it means that the steroids set up a different scenario. Now, we do know that prednisone can cause selenium deficiency, which is something that's very common as we age anyway, because the majority of selenium, again, comes from proteins. As we lose the ability to break down the proteins, it's one of the key components as far as heart health and insulin and blood sugar regulation. So it becomes very, very important to look for selenium deficiency. Look for how is blood sugar being regulated. And selenium also helps quite a bit with an area of the immune system that prevents infection. So we'd be looking for low-grade infection. Now, it can slide under the radar. Currently, our systems are very good. Our medical system is very good at catching acute infection. If his white blood cells are below 5 on repeat tests, then you can assume that there may be a low-grade chronic infection going on secondary to selenium deficiency that has to be identified and treated. So the flat affect could be more from having a low-grade cold or flu. You just don't have your normal reserves. The area of the brain that deals with that is the basal ganglia. It's where Parkinson's occurs. So I'm not talking a Parkinson-like scenario, but I am talking about a dopamine decrease because of what's happening internally, intestinally. So we do see that. So selenium becomes very, very important as far as looking to identify if there's a deficiency there. Specifically, SpectraCell is the name of a lab that will measure for selenium in your white blood cells, in your immune system. If they're deficient, that's where I would start, because then that we can start to build that back up. And also you can start to correct some of the underlying scenarios of why you might have been deficient or just borderline with that in the first place. But a lot of times when someone has that type of effect to a medication, medication was just the tipping point. You know what I mean? It just took them over the edge. Mm-hmm. That would be my first thought as far as that process, as far as where to go. And then there's more to the story that I don't have, so I can't answer it, because if they're thinking temporal arteritis, that means that he was having some level of pain to begin with, and I still don't have enough information to be able to go into what may have set that all up. However, based off the information I have, that's where I'd start as far as the selenium deficiency and looking for a hidden infection in the intestinal tract. And one of the ways you can do it are through those two lab tests, the white blood cell in a standard CBC and the SpectraCell lab test to actually measure selenium in the white blood cells themselves.
Wow, and I pray that he gets his zippity-doo-dah day back. I mean, that's so hard when you feel like you just flatline. Hard to not feel well. God yes. bless him. Wow. 877-933-2484. Ellen's checking in with Cottage Grove with a question. Hey, Ellen, thanks for holding.
Hey, thank you so much. So, yeah, I just have a quick question regarding thin, brittle nails with ridges. And I'm wondering if that is something related to the thyroid as well.
Well, it can be. So we do see nail changes with thyroid, coarsening of hair with hypothyroid. So we do see things, changes, because we talked earlier in the show about metabolism. As we start to have deficient metabolism, deficient thyroid, our cells don't turn over as quickly. So you see the fastest growing cells in our body become affected first. That'd be our nails and our hair. That's why when you go through cancer or chemotherapy kills the fastest acting cells. That's why people lose their hair or will have nail changes during chemotherapy. And so when you start to see ridges in your nails and you're not going through chemotherapy and you've ruled out thyroid stuff, it is an indication of mineral deficiencies, the most common being calcium, zinc, vitamin A, and even iron, and copper excess. So copper excess, you start to see some discoloration in the nail bed as well, and then the little white lines and stuff with the zinc being depleted there. So it is a sign of mineral deficiency. Thyroid might be part of it, but those other minerals are very, very important along with it.
How do you have copper excess? Where is that from?
Well, we actually have copper piping in a lot of our houses, and so the water... there can be leaching as part of that. It's actually quite shocking how much copper we have. So look up the research by Dr. Wilson on copper toxicity, and you'll be surprised how much it has influenced our mental state. When you have too much copper, it inhibits our zinc, which is crucial for the conversion of iodine to thyroid, also crucial for our immune system. We mentioned it also tonight for prostate cancer and prevention. So it's very, very important. So most of it actually comes from our water and what we ingest. But also copper is in a lot of different areas. A lot of makeup, a lot of vitamins and supplements have copper. But copper toxicity primarily is coming from our water and sources as far as the copper piping. And then Dr. Wilson has a full book on that you can print off. He's got all his information right there that he talks about all the different sources of copper from fish and everything else as well.
So if you don't have the money to get piping, I'm just wondering, thinking someone's listening today going, okay, I can't tear up all my piping. How do you detox from copper then?
So you add zinc. So you take extra zinc. They compete. So you can take zinc. But know this, if you take zinc, it's going to cause a reaction. So you have to support your other system. So when you do that, if you take zinc and have a negative reaction,
like
you feel like you've got cold or flu.
Mm.
So it's the opposite of what you would think would happen. It means you're actively immobilizing the copper or preventing it. And then you end up, the liver or kidney start to get a little bit backed up. So then you have to support one of those two areas. So a lot of times we'll have to do liver-friendly diets when you're balancing that back out, or kidney-friendly diets, meaning that it's a lot of high-water foods, and magnesium and potassium have to be part of the support system. And then our methylators like B12, methylated B12, and folic acid. So it's very important to know that if you have a reaction to something like that, there are other factors that you may have to support, like liver and kidney.
Boy, see, we're fearfully, wonderfully made.
Sure.
So Dave calls in and wants to know, he says, when I drink alcohol, I have tingling in my feet. Could they be related?
Yes, definitely. So tingling in the feet can happen. Okay, so if it's the alcohol itself numbs the nerves, and so that is a potential sign of excess amount of lymph. It's a potential sign of already the beginning of peripheral neuropathy at the worst of it. It can also affect blood flow, so there's a lot of different factors there. So that would mean if you don't drink a lot of alcohol and you have that reaction, then generally speaking, it could just mean you're not getting enough blood flow. But if you have blood sugar regulation issues already, if you're a type 2 diabetic or on your way, or if you don't know, I would make sure you get your blood sugar tested. Other than that, there's always the first thing that comes to mind, the reason why I kind of laugh there is because I want to know how much alcohol, because that actually matters too.
Yeah.
So, because if people drink too much alcohol, they literally can't feel their feet.
Exactly.
And so
yeah.
We need to get some clarity on that. Yeah. But if it's just simply one glass and then you have that reaction, I have concerns of a congested lymph system, which means it's the sugar in the alcohol that's causing the problem. Candida imbalances with yeast are part of that. Excessive food reactions or overconsumption of sugars would be the main cause of that. Checking to make sure you're not diabetic or pre-diabetic or insulin resistance would be a part of it as well. And making sure circulation is good.
Mm. Wow. Thank you so much. All right. Wanted to ask you about antacids, because we've talked about this a number of times, Doc, that we live in a society addicted to treating symptoms. And we are so fast moving. And it is why, and I'm not bashing the pharmaceutical industry, but it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, because part of it is we want
quick fixes, yeah.
You know, and I really don't want to have to do anything about it. And that's why this route that we're talking about is hard work, but it's the road to self-sustaining health. So once you get healthy, your body serves you well. So I'm just making that case. But so there is a place and a time for those who have severe acidic, I'm sure, balance or imbalance in their body, but lots of people, from my understanding, are popping antacids, and it's binding their ability to receive other vitamins. So just talk about that dynamic, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think antacids, I'm in the same boat as you are as far as just the overuse. There is a proper place for it, and there are people who absolutely need it. But the majority of people who take them, it's a quick fix, not looking at the underlying condition, and it sets up a tremendous amount of potential for other problems. So different things like B12, calcium, iron, zinc are needed. You need a proper acid in the stomach to absorb those. And I've already talked a little bit about just zinc by itself, all the different aspects. And if you can't absorb zinc, guess what accumulates more? Copper.
Hmm.
And then you get all the mental side effects of that. With B12, we need that for a proper metabolism and for hormone regulation. If we don't absorb B12, we start to see all kinds of estrogen imbalances and other methylation and problems, even with the heart. And same with folic acid. And so with calcium, if you don't have the calcium, you can't lay down the bone. Calcium also helps to calm certain areas of our digestive tract and our nervous system. So it becomes more of a fight or flight scenario simply because of inhibiting the stomach acid. And I remember 20 years ago, there were two medical doctors from the West Coast, and they published material on the fact that they believed that the majority of people given antacids actually had low stomach acid. And so the majority of these people, it was a timing mechanism problem, meaning the acid was being released at the wrong time. And so it was more of a nerve scenario with the stomach versus just too much acid or a dysfunctional valve, that type of thing. And we're starting to see that play out. There was a lot of discussion back and forth as far as too much stomach acid, not enough. So I wasn't sure which way to go with it until I saw a write-up by a doctor who wrote in how much energy it actually is required to make stomach acid. It actually takes a lot of ATP and energy to create that. So it's not that easy to make stomach acid. And so the theory of a timing mechanism problem is more sound for the most part. And so we see that if you just fix the timing mechanism part of the stomach when it releases the stomach acid, then these people tend to improve quite a bit. And the best way you can do that at home, as we consume things that are inflammatory, they can actually start to thin the lining of our stomach. The more stress that we have, it thins the lining of the stomach. Just like if someone has really severe acute stress, they develop an ulcer. An ulcer is a hole in your stomach. Stress influences that because stress is releasing stomach acid when you don't have food in the body. And so if there's nothing for it to digest, it sits there. And so they're mistaking that with too much stomach acid when the real problem is a stress reflex that's basically causing the release of acid at the wrong time. And so we want to work on the stress part of it to correct the problem. But also hidden infections and food allergies and inflammatory foods will do the same thing. The most common are coffee, sugar, and spicy food. And the last one is tomato sauce, of all things. So when we consume too many of these things, we start to thin our digestive system, especially when there's stress. And that includes sleep disorders where you're not digesting properly. It includes when you overeat and then the stomach gets caught up in the diaphragm. So physical, mental, and chemical stressors can all set up the scenario to thin the stomach lining. It becomes uber sensitive and it starts releasing acid just thinking about food. And so it's more of a timing mechanism problem than it is an actual excessive amount of stomach acid.
And maybe this is what we do. Maybe we ask God, show me where I'm treating symptoms where you want to show me a root cause. Because maybe God really wants to help you manage stress and change the story you tell yourself about the level of stress that you're carrying. I mean, that may be your path to freedom. I just think it's fascinating. Unless we get calls, if we don't get calls on this other side, we've got one segment left with Dr. Troy. I want to talk with you about, you know, I hear this question often from listeners. I eat healthy, I exercise, I cannot lose weight. I want to ask you about why that is and any advice you'd have for that person. And otherwise, the phone lines are still open, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute.
Yeah, love that.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. It's another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. I'm going to say one more word about our live studio audience next month because I'm just so excited about it. We've got some space for you. If you want to join us, what we're going to talk about, we have a live studio audience. We'll have some refreshments, but our kind of back and forth dialogue, at least we'll kick off with this and then we'll take live studio audience questions. But how to prepare for the holidays, because Dr. Troy will talk about some of the stresses that happen just in your physiology by virtue of the change of season and how we add stress to our symptoms, to our system by just entering into the rat race. And we want so much for you to enter into the holidays with an ebb and a flow and a health and a presence that when you wake up January 1st, you feel great and you'll be glad that you stewarded your holidays the way you did. That's what we'll be talking about. Free tickets. All you have to do is email me. Just put live audience or something like that in the subject line. Susie@myfaithradio.com. All we need is your name and your phone number, and then we'll send you a confirmation, right? Susie@myfaithradio.com. Julie's checking in from Madison with a question for you, Doc. Hey, Julie, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have been told recently that I have SIBO, and I'm eating, I'm on a really rigid diet, and things are going fine, but for a very long time, I just have a really hard time gaining weight. And I'm wondering about that, and also wondering if there's a particular brand of vitamin, of supplement that Dr. Troy recommends.
What did he say?
Specifically for SIBO? Brand of supplement for SIBO?
That, and yes, for that in particular. And also if there's a test I could have done to show what levels in minerals and things that I might be deficient in.
Okay.
So the testing is, there are actually a lot of tests. So testing for vitamins and minerals are very different than testing for other things. So you have to look at probabilities, number one. But also, just because you're testing for them, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're 100% accurate. So I want to talk a little bit about that. For example, when you get a serum B12 test done, that tells you how much B12 you have circulating in the blood. What that doesn't tell you is how much B12 you're actually using in the body. So if you have a problem converting that B12, it's going to show that you're high and you have high levels of B12 in the blood. But you could have symptoms of low B12. So when it comes to that particular vitamin, we would then look at a test called methylmalonic acid. Methylmalonic acid is an indicator of how much B12 you're actively using. So when you get those two lab tests, that gives you a clearer picture. Other things that use B12, we can start to see, like with certain red blood cells and anemia, we can start to glean a picture. So I like to use a full comprehensive blood panel. We use a company called LabCorp that'll draw the blood, and or we'll do a comprehensive panel of about 70 different blood tests. And that gives us a baseline. And when you look at all of the different variables within that, as far as the blood work, you can start to see a pattern. And then that tells us more definitively about nutritional deficiencies. So a person who is good at a functional medicine can see the patterns in there. And we have a person at our clinic that literally just, that's her job. She looks at the patterns in the blood work. And she happens to love that, so she gets to do it. And so those patterns become more available. You can also do SpectraCell, and they'll look at just the nutritional components of the white blood cells. And so the thing I really want you to hear is when it comes to nutritional deficiencies, it's not as clear-cut as here it is in the white blood cells, so that equals deficient in the whole body. You have to put everything else into play. Some exceptions are vitamin D. If your vitamin D level in the blood is low, it's low. So we do, for the most part, so we do need a more comprehensive view when it comes to nutritional stuff. For me, I use, for SIBO, you have to make sure you are taking a product that helps with stomach acid, the hydrochloric acid. We like to use Spectrazyme from Metagenics, Nutrition Dynamics here locally in the Twin Cities. And we use their products called Candibactin AR and BR as well. And then we use digestive enzymes, and we usually use a company called USANA Health Sciences for that. And occasionally people cannot tolerate the oils that are in the Candibactin AR, and so we'll switch to another product called Biocidin. Now, Biocidin is something that will also help with antibacterial, but it has garlic in it, which is on the low FODMAPs do not eat list. So the diet you're on is probably the low FODMAPs diet. And Biocidin, you can get away with because the FODMAPs, basically, it should be low, not no. What that means is you're allowed a little bit of garlic, especially if it's in a formula that helps to kill off the bacteria. So those are the main products we like to use. It's very important that your stomach and stomach acid be regulated and your ileocecal valve function be functioning 100%, because those are the two areas when they become compromised that help set up the whole SIBO scenario in the first place.
All right. And that ileocecal valve is like to the right of your belly button by a few inches. And if you, before you go, when you go to bed, lay down, just push. And if it hurts, just kind of push in and hold it, right?
Yep.
And that actually helps just sort of set things free so that you don't wake up and feel all kind of locked up, so to speak.
Yep.
We've just got a little bit of time here. We're going to grab, see if we can grab a couple more calls. Vern is checking in from Rockford. Hey, Vern, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I take a boatload of supplements. So I take about a handful in the morning. And I'm wondering, the only thing I've ever read is if it causes nausea, don't take that many. But is there a limit to how many supplements you can take at a time? Or is there a timing throughout the day that you recommend taking them? Or can I just take them all in the morning and then if my stomach can handle it?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Yeah, it's a good question because not only is it, can the stomach handle it, but it, are they serving the body as a whole? Are they competing at all? So it's hard to answer that question without knowing the specifics of what's going on with your health. This is my general rule. Supplements are meant to supplement a healthy lifestyle. So lifestyle is first and foremost, and then we actually want you on the least number of supplements possible. However, for certain people with active conditions, that can be challenging. So you can do a handful of supplements, but you have to make sure you don't react to the supplements. So everyone's a little bit different this way, and you have to make sure you're actually absorbing what's in the supplement. So I would rather see people take a high-quality supplement and less of it than a whole bunch of supplements. And I want to see a rational reason for why you're taking that supplement. So people come in to the clinic all the time with boxes of supplements, because when you do the research and you look out there, they'll say, this is good for this symptom. If you have headaches, then this is good. Milk thistle is good, and alpha lipoic acid is good, and vitamin C is good. And the problem is that all might be true, but only one of those three is what you actually need. So we need some level of rationale and something measurable to say, this is why I'm doing it. Blood work or a physical exam or symptom list, something along the lines, and then you can take those supplements. Now, if your digestive system is tolerating them, well, that's a good sign that you're not overdoing it. If you are seeing positive changes in blood work, lab work, or symptoms, then that's a good sign. But always, always, always focus on diet and lifestyle first and try and take the most minimal amount of supplements that gets the job done. A few exceptions are your antioxidants. We are so bombarded by free radicals in this world that we need a ton of antioxidants, and we can flood our system. Most water-soluble antioxidants will be just flushed out in our urine once we actually, if we don't use them or anything like that. So those are some of the few exceptions are the antioxidants. But beyond that, just do your best to take what is measurably needed.
Boy, that's a fantastic question. We could probably do a whole show,
yes,
at least a whole hour on that. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program on our website at myfaithradio.com. Don't forget to sign up for our live studio audience event. We're super excited. We'd love to see you. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He is the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.